5. Vern woke up. He was lying in bed, feeling the sunlight shining on him. If he opened his eyes, it would blind him. He turned the other way, and the red haze became black. He yawned. The covers were twisted around him. He opened one eye a little to see the clock. The clock wasn't there. He was facing a bare wall, the paint peeling, stained and cracking with dirt and age. For a moment, he felt startled. He sat quickly up. Across the room, Carl was still asleep. His blonde head was hidden under the covers. Only his hand and arm, hanging over the side of the bed, were visible. Vern reached around on the floor and found his glasses. He fitted them into place and got slowly out of bed. It was only 8 o'clock. He went over and sat by his clothes, heaped across an unused bed, rubbing his hands together and yawning. The day was warm and bright. Out the window, he could see the trees and carefully arranged shrubs that grew in front of the men's dorm. A long way off, a bluebird was hopping among some weeds, growing up beside a heap of rusting slag. Presently, he picked up his clothing and began to dress. 8 o'clock was too early. He had wakened from years of habit, but there was no need any longer. There was nothing to get to, nothing to begin. It was all behind him, in the past. He let go of his shirt, dropping it. Why was he up? What for? There was nothing to do. He padded back to his bed and slid into it, pulling the blankets up over him. Carl stirred a little in his sleep. Vern watched him. How long he was. His feet and head stuck out at both ends of the bed. He smiled. Gazing at the youth sprawled out on the bed, snoring faintly, Vern thought again of Teddy. The smile faded. That night he had come into the apartment. He had found her there, lying on his bed, passed out, messy and asleep. He let his mind wander back to the scene. Her shoes had been kicked off. Her skirt was up around her waist, showing her thin white legs. She had rolled her stockings down. They were wrinkled and sagging. Vern went back and bolted the door to the hall. He returned to the bedroom. She had turned over so that her face was away from him. He could still hear her dull breathing. What had the manager thought? Had he known she was drunk? Maybe he thought she was sick. Why had she come to his place? He sat down on the edge of the bed. It was hard to connect her with Don Field. Don was so square, so out of the course of things. He plodded along between one meaningless activity and another, hunting down a certain old Genet record of the New Orleans Rhythm Kings, reading a forgotten science fiction serial in an old Air Wonder Stories magazine, patronizing some humdrum cafe because it was off the beaten path and served some peculiar sauce. Everything he did was cultish, set aside. But this girl looked as if she flowed in the mainstream of things. Perhaps she had just picked up Don for a passing moment. It was hard to tell. He had never heard Don mention her before. Watching, waiting for her to wake up, Vern lit a cigarette. In the life of Vern Tilden, there had been much trouble. That is true of most small men. A little man is aware of things a large man can ignore, like colors beyond the end of the spectrum, invisible to the ordinary eye. Certain things were major realities to Vern that another man would not even have noticed. He had grown up in Washington, D.C. Most of his early life had been spent in the bleak, snow-covered streets and vacant lots of the little town of Jackson Heights, just outside of the city proper. In the winter, he and his brother went sledding. When they had to stay indoors, they played duets on the piano together. He remembered nothing about the piano later in life. Finally, he had switched to the oboe, which he played in the high school orchestra. Later, he gave up that, too. Playing in the high school orchestra made him look silly. He was practicing in the afternoon when he could have been walking uptown with the other kids, and on some days he had to wear the gaudy red and gold uniform of the school that made him look like a ticket taker in a theater. After school, he was very much alone. When he had finished practicing, he ran up to the music store and listened to records. At that age, he talked with a slight stutter, in a nervous, excited way. It made him shy with people. His brother graduated from college and left the family home. They got letters from him once in a while. Vern read a lot, and for a while he thought he would go on to college too. But at 19, when he finished high school, his father convinced him that it would not be too bad a thing if he earned a little money working for a while. The family had carried the burden for too long. Some help was needed. He got a job in the bookkeeping end of a big department store, typing up monthly statements and emptying the wastebaskets. At 19, a boy who still stuttered and who occasionally blew a few notes on his oboe, he met a girl his own age who was enough interested in books and music so that there seemed to be something between them, for a time. She was blonde and tall, with hair like corn silk. Her people came from the Middle West. She had blue eyes and a soft, thoughtful voice. The two of them walked and read and went to Sunday concerts and considered their lives together. One rainy night, when his family was away at the movies, Vern and the girl went upstairs to his room, and with many giggles and heartbeats, many murmurs and fears and nervous glances out the window, they pulled the shades down and crept into the little wooden bed he had slept in since he was a baby. There, in the room with his postage stamps, his model airplanes and maps, his oboe standing up silently in the corner, all the things from his so recently discarded childhood, Vern and the girl lay huddled together, heart against heart, knee against knee, shaking and holding on to each other. Outside, the rain poured down. Cars slithered past. The room was silent, except for their own sounds. At first, the girl was withdrawn, nervous and cold. But then, just as everything seemed to have come to an end, and he was starting to think about getting up again, something strange came over her, something he did not understand. All at once, her rigid body relaxed. The coldness fled. He was pulled back, dragged abruptly against a scalding belly that strained and quivered with such violence that only the eventual return of the family and the sudden scramble to dress was sufficiently distracting to save him. He escaped. His father drove her home. Vern and the girl were silent all the way. After that, their relationship gradually fell off. He continued to work at the bookkeeping office. The idea of the university became dimmer and dimmer. When he was 21, he met another girl. This one was tall and dark and quiet. Her treasure was sold dearly. He found himself married, all at once, living in a one-room apartment. Watching her string bras and underpants across the bathroom, smelling the starch and iron in the kitchen, and the eternal mechanical presence of pin curls next to him on the pillow. The marriage lasted only a few months. Sometime between it and the Second World War, he never knew just when, the last memory of college faded from his mind, to be lost and forgotten forever. When the reed broke, he put his oboe away in the closet. The stutter had disappeared, and he had grown a small dark mustache. But his hands shook when he lit a cigarette. There was still a too quick nervous motion about him. Liquor helped that. Liquor allowed him to laugh at things that normally shut him up tight for days. He found himself beginning to get an edge on men. They were no match for his rapid tongue, his developing razor wit. A hard chilliness was slipping into him, into his speech. It carried him a long way. It was good to have. When the war came, he joined the army. He was too small and light to be much good, but they didn't like to lose a man whose mind worked so fast. He finished out the war teaching others to do the things he couldn't. The mustache disappeared, and he learned just how much he could drink before there was no turning back. His hair began to thin. It became soft and wispy. He put on horn-rimmed glasses and discovered French cuffs. The kind of music he had once played on his oboe was almost forgotten. Somehow, in the rarefied classical strata, he felt more cut off and alone than usual. He was more separated than before from the things he wanted. What did he want? He was not sure. He did not intend to let anything stand in his way, but he did not know in which direction that way might be found. But a man can face the knowledge that he has not found his rut, his depth, his way and people only so long. Then he stops worrying about it. Vern married again. This girl was plump and competent. She had been secretary to very important people. In her, he saw the drive and direction that he himself seemed still to lack. She knew exactly what she wanted. A husband, a home, a kitchen, furniture, clothes. She moved in a tight little circle, as hard and brittle as the red polish on her neatly trimmed nails. Whatever there was left in Vern of his memory of books and music, model airplanes, and his ticket seller's bright uniform soon disappeared. With Anne, music and books and ideas were real enough, but they existed only as a means to something else. He found himself listening to things as background music that had, at one time, been intimate parts of his life. One night he got up from the expensive couch in the graciously furnished living room, turned off the immense television set, and headed for the nearest bar. Sometime during the hazy, indistinct days that followed, he was rolled, left to lie in the freezing gutters of Washington in deep winter, and booked at the city jail. They let him go the next day. He wandered around, his hands in his pockets, watching the children sledding in the snow. With his second marriage over, he gathered up what things were his and set off for New York. The taste that he had had for music had spoiled. He began to sit long hours in dark bars, tapping with a 50-cent piece, watching the people and listening to the sour, bitter music from the Little Negro in mixed combos. His knowledge of jazz eventually became of use to him. He got a job with a small station, turning over jazz records in the early hours of morning. After a year or so, he had his own program. He had begun to slide into a kind of existence that seemed to fit. Why? He did not know. He was too small a man to drink as much as he did. There were many mornings when he could scarcely drag himself out of bed. His friends were stooped, preoccupied cultists, occasional natty homosexuals, hard-voiced lesbians. Smoke and sour sounds, half dollars and endless commercials. Once he stopped, staring into the mirror, rubbing the yellow hanging flesh of his neck. The tiny hairs stuck out like pin feathers. His eyes gazed blindly back at him. He was like some runt of a chicken, some plucked and charred creature that had been hung from a hook, drying slowly, corroding through the years. A wrinkled, dried-up runt of a bird. But then he shaved, washed, put on a clean shirt, drank some orange juice, shined his shoes, and it was all forgotten. He put on his coat and went to work. Teddy stirred. Vern snapped back, glancing down at her. He put his cigarette out and stood up, stiff and cold. He went over and pulled down the shades and turned on the lamp. Presently, the girl rolled over toward him. He could see her teeth, small and even, her long mouth, much too long for such a lank face. Suddenly she opened her eyes. She blinked, gazing at him fixedly, unwinking. Then she began to struggle to a sitting position.
Jesus!
She shuddered, gagging.
Christ!
How do you feel?
How long have I been lying here?
It's about 7:30.
That late? Help me up like a deer, won't you?
She got up unsteadily. Vern took her arm. She pulled her stockings up and smoothed her skirt. Then she went into the bathroom. Vern lit another cigarette and waited. At last she came out and picked up her shoes. She put them on, sitting at the foot of the bed.
Do you want to take me home?
She said. Now?
Would you?
Sure. He brought her the coat and purse she had left in the living room. Her hair was shaggy and disarrayed. Her clothes were messy and crumpled. When he went by her to let her into the hall, he got a whiff of a sour, unhealthy odor, perspiration and urine and liquor. They went downstairs silently and got into the car. As they drove along the road, Teddy said little. She stared out the window at the passing lights and signs. The window rolled down. Several times Vern started to speak, but gave it up and remained silent. They reached her place, and he drew the car over to the curb. Teddy pushed the door open and got out. Suddenly, she stopped.
Vern, do you want to see what my apartment looks like? You've never seen it.
Not particularly, he said slowly. It's late.
Suit yourself.
She hesitated.
It's not so late.
It is for me. She turned and moved slowly away from the car, across the sidewalk toward the building. Vern got out. He rolled up the windows and locked the doors. Teddy stood waiting for him.
You changed your mind?
Just for a few minutes. Vern gazed off down the dark street. The houses were tall and close together, uniform in appearance and unattractive. At the bottom of a hill was the beginnings of a commercial district, a dank, ratty cluster of grocery stores, hardware stores, Italian bakeries, a boarded-up candy shop. The wind blew a newspaper along against a gaunt telephone pole.
"Coming?"
Teddy said from the steps. They went up to her floor. She opened her apartment door and turned on the light, walking quickly through the room. The place was in disorder. On a low table were two half-empty whiskey bottles and ashtrays spilling over with cigarette stubs. Clothes were strewn over everything, the chairs, the lamp, the bookcase, even the floor. He went slowly inside.
"I'll change,"
Teddy called, going into the bedroom. He caught a glimpse of an unmade bed, open dresser drawers, more clothes. On the wall over the bed was a big photograph, a thin nude girl, lank and bony, with little breasts like pears. He moved in to look at it. Teddy disappeared into the bathroom.
"I'll be right out."
The picture was of her. Vern moved back into the living room. One wall was a bright blue, a solid dark sheet. She had painted the apartment herself. On the walls were prints. Modigliani, Kandinsky, Hieronymus Bosch. A phonograph and records, jazz and chamber music. Mobiles. Three of them. He eased himself slowly onto the couch, crossing his legs. After a while, Teddy came into the room and stood by the door, leaning against it, her arms folded.
"Want anything to drink?"
she said. "Nothing. I'm about to leave." Vern got his pipe out and poured tobacco into it. He lit up silently.
"What do you think of the place?"
"It's all right. Those are nice mats." He got up and went over to some Chinese mats hanging down the side of the wall. From where he stood, he could see into the kitchen. The sideboard was covered with dirty dishes, cups, and glasses. He wandered away, hands in his pockets. "It's cold in here. Maybe it's the colors." He fingered the burlap drapes. Teddy watched him without expression. She had put on a scarlet wrapper, fastened with a knotted cord, and slippers. She lit a cigarette and smoked, long and austere in her flamboyant silk robe. Her face was haggard. She looked more like a bird than ever, her nose like a beak, her eyes black and sunken. She walked toward the couch.
"I did the painting. The walls?"
"I thought you did." Vern sat down again, on a chair by the door. Teddy sprawled out on the couch, one foot up, waving her toes back and forth. Neither spoke.
"It's getting late,"
Teddy said finally. Vern stood up. "I know. Well, it's been nice."
"You going?"
"I'll see you."
"Thanks for coming."
He went to the door, taking hold of the knob. Teddy was still sprawled out, long and bony, her hair dark and lusterless, damp hanks against her neck. "You look pretty washed out," Vern said. Teddy smiled.
"Look, baby, you've been a dear, now run along. I'll see you again soon."
He laughed. "All right." He went downstairs slowly, out onto the street. The air was cold and full of vitality. There was no sound at all except for a dim murmur that came from the entrance of a bar at the foot of the hill. He got into his car and drove away. Don Field came stumping around to the station when Vern was off his shift the next day. He carried a magazine under his arm. He had on dark glasses and a sports shirt. "Greetings," Vern said as they walked away from the station building toward his car. "How goes it?"
"Medium. You?"
"All right." Vern got into the car. Don stood outside. "Do you want a ride?" Don thought for a moment. He got slowly inside.
"Okay,"
he said resignedly. They drove along with the other cars, going home from work. "Nice evening," Vern said.
"Uh-huh."
There was a long silence. At last, Don cleared his throat.
"What'd you think of Teddy?"
"Seemed intelligent."
"Uh-huh."
Vern looked at him out of the corner of his eye. "Why'd he ask?"
"No reason. I'm getting kind of tired of having her around. They're all the same after a while."
Going to let her go, eh? He thought, you great, arrogant gargoyle.
Well, of course, I hate to give up a good thing, but I have been toying with the idea.
He fooled with the cover of the magazine he was carrying.
It costs money.
Well, do what you want. You're old enough now.
You gonna eat at home?
Why?
Just wondering. I thought maybe I'd stop down at Jameson's for a French dinner.
That's nice.
You don't want to come along?
No thanks, he added, but I'll be glad to drive you there and let you off. He let Don off in front of the restaurant and then went on. After a few minutes driving, he found himself in his own neighborhood. He drew up in front of his apartment building and turned the motor off. Sitting in the car, he lit his pipe and began to smoke. He did not want to go upstairs just yet. It was still early, not even 7. He had come off work and driven Don to the restaurant, and that was all. Now he was in front of his own building. In a moment, he would go upstairs, enter the apartment, take off his hat and coat, and begin preparing himself something to eat. And after that? Outside the car, a few people hurried along in the semi-darkness. Dark, similar lumps that moved quickly past his car and out of sight. One shape turned in at a doorway. A flash of warm yellow light revealed a middle-aged woman with an armload of groceries. For a moment she stood framed in the light. Vern saw into a living room, a man sitting in a deep chair with a newspaper, a boy playing on the rug. He could almost smell the warm air that drifted out, to be dissipated by the cold night. He thought about it. He and his brother had sat on the rug like that, playing. Sometimes they went into the piano room and played duets together until dinner was ready. In the early evening, with the sun just down and the sky still brighter than the earth, in the warm piano room filled up by the massive old piano, with the stacks of music tossed everywhere, he and his brother played Silly Things by Grieg and McDowell and Cooey. Suddenly, there would be their mother, filling up the doorway with her bulk, telling them dinner was on the table. More people hurried past. Some newspapers, blown by the wind, rolled by in a heap and swept up against a mailbox. Were there drops of rain beginning to show on the pavement? At the corner, the Italian who owned the little grocery came out with a bent metal rod and began to roll up his awning, slowly, with great, elaborate turns. Vern put out his pipe and switched the motor back on. He drove down the street and around the corner. He drove aimlessly, not paying any particular attention to the houses and cars that filled up the darkness. When he saw a neon sign, Club 21, he pulled over to the curb and stopped. He rolled up his windows and got out. The night air was cold. A mist pressed against him, carried by the wind. He slammed the car door and walked across the sidewalk to the club, pushing the heavy plush doors open with his shoulder. In the dim light, he saw a long row of glasses and black onyx, and tall red columns of distorted light, wavery and subtle, that surrounded the mirror behind the bar. The rows of half-transparent glasses broke up the red light. It seemed as if the light came from inside each glass. The light slithered around the bar, appearing everywhere, mixing with the green coming from a gold-glow neon sign in the window. On the left, in deep chairs around a table, 3 men and a woman were sitting. Their table was a litter of bottles and cigarette stubs. The other tables were vacant. Vern walked over to the bar and sat down. The bartender put down his rag and turned toward him.
Scotch and water, no ice.
The bartender nodded and went away. Vern sat, hearing the thud of the counters at the shuffleboard table at the back. A little way down the bar, 2 men were talking loudly.
So if this goddamn nag could have got in.
Listen, I told you if a horse could get its ass over the wire long enough.
Will you let me finish? I want to say.
I thought you were finished.
I wasn't. You know I wasn't. Don't shit me.
65 cents, mister,
the bartender said. He put a small glass on the bar in front of Vern. Vern took a dollar bill and gave it to the bartender. He drank the liquor slowly. As he drank, he stared into the thousands of rows of bottles behind the bar. They were dully lit by the same red light, now more intense as it issued past the bottles, coming from behind them and around them, spreading out in a wave of motion. It had become quiet. The 2 men stopped talking and put their coats on. They passed Vern, walking out through the heavy doors and disappearing beyond. The man playing shuffleboard gave up and came over to the bar to sit down. In the dim light, his face was a dark shadow. He sat with his chin in his hands, not moving or looking to either side. Vern looked past him and saw other men sitting, gazing ahead of them, silent, lost in thought. His mind began to wander. He thought about how he used to practice the oboe. He would sit in his room, holding the strange, cold instrument, blowing into it hour after hour. In the corner, the radio played softly. He could remember many details of his room in the family house. How long ago it was. He had owned a little tabletop phonograph and some cheap records, part of a newspaper offer. The Dvorak New World Symphony. The Beethoven Fifth. Some Strauss waltzes. He played the records until they began to turn white. He used cactus needles because when they got dull, he could sharpen them again and again. He had a paper route. He used his mother's charge account at a department store to buy Heinrich Van Loon's History of the World and Diseases of the Mind by Professor Benjamin Stoddard. At the end of the month, he had scarcely any money left over once he paid her back. He had owned a mimeograph machine. He put out a little newspaper that he sold to the neighbors for 3 cents. In the silence of the bar, a man coughed. He moved on his stool. There were no other noises. The men sat looking straight ahead of them, at the rows of glasses, at the red light that ran up and around the massive mirror. Their reflections gazed back, dim, hunched, unmoving. The minutes passed, and no one moved. Slowly, an uncomfortable tension built up around them, a sharp, painful pressure. Suddenly, the bartender came to life. He walked along the wood planking to the other end of the bar. The doors opened, and a man and woman came in from the street, laughing and breathing loudly. They sat down at a table. Vern finished his drink and pulled his coat around him. He got up and walked outside onto the sidewalk, his hands in his pockets. The air was cold. The street was deserted. There was no one in sight. He got in his car and drove back slowly to his apartment. He felt listless and dull. Did he want to go home? But if he did not, where should he go instead? He parked the car and got out. He walked up the stairs, his shoes making no sound in the dull gray carpet. The hall was deserted. At the far end, a deep red light glowed. Fire exit. Above him, a small globe sunk in the plaster of the ceiling shed enough illumination for him to find his key. He pushed the key into the lock and opened the door. Looking into the dark apartment, gray and still in the dim light, he felt a cold and unhappy chill move up and settle in his heart. Suddenly, his jaws opened. His head began to shake. He caught himself against the door and held on tight, his teeth chattering and his eyes wide. The fit moved quickly through him and was gone. He breathed a shaky sigh of relief, running his fingers through his hair. Had it been tiredness? Cold? He did not know. He turned around and went out of the apartment, pulling the door shut behind him. It did not take him long to find Teddy's place. He remembered the bar on the corner and the tall, unpainted signboard that was across the street. He parked his car and got out. Looking up toward her window, he could see no sign of light. He moved a little way down the sidewalk, but still he could make out nothing. Nevertheless, he knew she was inside. How did he know? He did not bother to wonder. He made sure the doors to his car were locked, and then, going up the short flight of steps, he rang the girl's door buzzer. The door clicked. He pushed it open and went inside. He had expected her to come out in the hall, but above him her door remained shut. He climbed the stairs and stood for a moment outside her door, his hand raised to knock. A crack of brilliance showed under the door, and muffled and far away he could hear voices. At last, he knocked. The voices stopped. He felt sweat rise to the surface of his hands and forehead. There was the sound of someone moving around, and in a moment the door was pulled violently open. Teddy, in a white shirt and women's jeans, stared at him in amazement.
Really? This is too much.
Behind her, several women were sitting around the living room. The phonograph was on loud, some deep New Orleans blues. May I come in?
Darling, please do.
He followed her inside. Three women, in men's pants and shirts, looked calmly up at him.
Vern, this is Bobby and Bert and Terry.
They nodded, without speaking. Vern turned to Teddy. I just thought I'd drop by. Maybe I better come back later. I don't want to...
Give me a coat.
She walked into the bedroom. He followed. We can talk some other time, Vern said.
These are just girls from the building. You're not breaking anything up.
She hung up his coat.
They won't stay long.
I don't want it.
Don't worry.
She took his arm as they went back, leading him. Her fingers were hard and strong. When they entered the living room, they found the three women on their feet, standing near the door to the hall.
We have to go. We'll be back.
They opened the door.
Glad to meet you, mister.
But don't leave on my account, Vern murmured. They closed the door behind them. I'm sorry I drove them out.
That's all right.
Teddy began picking up the glasses around the room.
What do you want to drink? How would some John Jameson go?
John Jameson would go fine. He sat down on the couch. The phonograph was still playing blues. He recognized Bessie Smith's harsh, deep voice. He leaned back, his head against the couch. The room was warm and smelled of women. Presently, Teddy returned with two glasses. She put one by him and sat down on the floor by the phonograph. Thanks, Vern said, lifting the glass. The glass was cool and moist. He swallowed, shutting his eyes. The liquor scorched his throat and lungs. It was incredibly alive. If there were ever a water of life, this was it. He sighed.
How is it?
Fine. Presently, he said, Were you surprised to see me?
No, not very. You didn't have any trouble finding the place, did you?
I found it all right. He looked around the room. It had been cleaned up. The clothes and bottles were gone. The ashtrays had been emptied. Your room looks better this time.
You didn't think much of it before.
Vern smiled crookedly. I didn't think much of anything that evening.
Don't think I'm going to apologize.
Forget it. They were silent, listening to the music. Presently, the records came to an end.
What do you want to hear now? Anything?
Vern set his drink down and went over to the record cabinet. Squatting down on his haunches, he examined the backs of the albums, turning his head on an angle.
How about the Bach Flute and Strings?
He drew out the album. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Put it on.
He placed the records carefully on the turntable. In a few moments, the measured tones of the solemn little dances began to fill the room. Vern returned to his place, beside his drink. Nice. Real nice.
How long have you known Don?
Teddy said. Couple of years, I guess. Why?
Just wondering.
I don't see much of him. He comes into the station once in a while, tries to get me to play more Dixieland on the program.
I see.
What do you think of him?
I think he's an intellectual simp.
Vern laughed. Well, you don't have to go around with him.
No, I don't.
Why do you then? She shrugged.
Don's a nice boy, in some ways.
He looks as if he were rotting away from some sort of fungus.
Don knows some interesting places. You learn from each person you meet.
What did you ever learn from him? All about moldy fig jazz?
He's quite an authority on New Orleans jazz.
If that means anything. Well, let's forget it. They listened to the suite.
This part is so beautiful,
Teddy said.
Do you remember what Huxley said about it in Point Counterpoint? I like that passage.
About the guts of a cat? The violins? That was when the old scientist was coming down the stairs, down to the party, where they were playing this.
Music figured a lot in the book.
Vern listened to the music. Gradually it absorbed his attention. Some of the loneliness he had felt earlier began to seep back. He pulled himself up on the couch, rubbing his eyes.
What's the matter?
Teddy said. Nothing. Thinking about the book. He lifted his glass, but it was empty. He held the empty glass up to the light, turning it slowly.
The book was about death,
Teddy said. Vern got up and went over to the bookcase. He turned his back to her, reading the titles of the books. After a time, Teddy came over and stood beside him.
I see you like Elliot, Vern said. Great man, for a neo-fascist.
He slid a slender book out.
The hell is this? Murder in the Cathedral?
It's a play about Thomas Becket.
Vern put it back. You have a lot of young. All the neo-fascists. Integration of the personality.
He's a nice old man. He goes for long walks in the snow. What's wrong with you all of a sudden?
Vern turned around suddenly.
Well, young lady, let's go someplace. Where'd you like to go? Or do you want to go anywhere? Or shall I leave and go home?
Teddy laughed.
Let's just talk. I'm tired of going around to dark little places, okay?
Vern sat down on the couch. I know what you mean.